growth, and body. Growth indicates activity. It's a relative measurement of size and time. Size could be thought of as a feeling. Do you have a larger love for something now than you did previously? Or are you looking at a mountain range where the mountains are getting broader as you get above the trees and go to a higher elevation to look? Are you getting a larger size of the mountain view? Or you could be looking at a series of balls. You could look at a golf ball, a baseball, a softball, a basketball. In any event, it is a relative viewpoint that could be true or false. One might be looking at a CGI, which is a computer graphic image in which nothing is there at all. It only is projecting an image that makes it look like it is real. A lot of the images that are seen today on television are CGI. They're not the real people. Especially in the political realm, where many of the top people have been executed for treason, and the ones who are trying to make the public believe that they're still alive generate an image. So it can be a total nothing that is seen, or think about a flower that starts out as a bud and then starts opening up into a beautiful blossom. One could think of that as growth. Many ways to think about growth, but it's basically an individual viewpoint that is making the decision on what growth actually consists of. Whether it is real or unreal. One could feel something, a texture. One with rough hands may not be able to feel a real fine difference in texture, whereas maybe one with soft hands could feel every little difference in texture. It is all individual viewpoint. Mary Baker Eddy quotes Shakespeare as saying, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." So in other words, our thoughts are what interpret what is seen. On the other hand, if we're very passive, our thoughts could be formed by something that is outside of thought. If the thought is very active, the thought projects to create the experience. What about body? Body is a container. One's body that they walk around with, that talks and walks and feels and looks and sees and hears, tastes, smells, feels. That is a concept that can be either translated as physical or spiritual. Obviously, the body we want to use, the interpretation we want to accept, is spirit, The Bible indicates in many places that God is spirit. It also indicates that there is nothing but God, that God is all in all. Mr. Rawson healed someone who had an entire load of rocks dumped on him, and he was totally covered up. He saw this experience along with a friend of his, who's also an author on our website, and the friend is the one that reported what happened when Mr. Rawson saw this experience, because they were both looking out the window together. And Mr. Rawson said only these words: "There is nothing but God." With that, the man jumped up through the rocks like a rocket, without a scratch, without any injury, damage, or any hesitation. And apparently got back in the vehicle and drove away. Or maybe he loaded the wagon up with rocks again. This was in back in the early, very early 1900s, where he had an animal that was pulling this cart full of rocks. And something alarmed the animal while he was out there inspecting the tailgate. And it raised up and dumped the whole load of rocks on him. So I presume he probably did something about the pile of rocks and not just drove off, but he was not injured. Now, obviously, Mr. Rawson was an experienced practitioner, and we have a book that he wrote that records 1,315 different treatments that one could possibly refer to, would probably cover any ailment one could ever think of. But the point is that he knew in his own experience, he felt very confident that God was in control of every action. Now, he didn't take the time to go through the strategy or the thinking process. He just announced the absolute fact. And that is that there is nothing but God, and that God is perfect. He didn't say anything else, just there is nothing but God. But obviously he was realizing, even though it was instantaneous, he was realizing that there is no other power. There's no power that can upset the divine principle of God. Nothing can throw it out of balance. There can't be any accident, because accident means chaos and principle means balance, order, structure, system. Nothing can be out of balance if that is all of the substance of spirit, because spirit is not composed of matter, but of spirit. So what is the concept that is being considered for body or for growth? It's individual. Mary Baker Eddy, in the Diapason of Heaven, states that we must make affirmative statements continuously. She says, make these statements often. The Diapason of Heaven statements that she recommends, divided into seven categories of the seven synonymous terms for God, will be posted on the website probably today. And I'm not going to make those a part of this treatment. But you will see when you read them or listen to them, because they're also recorded, that they make very vivid, firm statements of truth. They're not wishy-washy. They are right to the point. Very short. A few words in each phrase. As little as two or three words. God is good is one of them. Good is God. Anything abnormal couldn't be good, because what is normal is perfection. Because God is spirit. Don't you love it when these insurance companies say, well, we're not going to cover that loss, whatever it is, some kind of a catastrophic loss, because that's an act of God. Boy, will they think of any excuse to be fraudulent. The only act of God there is an act of good, an act of perfection. And basically what that means is it's a revelation. It's giving us an enlightened view of reality. Think about body. Body is a container. What really is in one's body? What is included as one's body? If you have a thought that you're on the moon, or that you're in a spaceship heading towards Mars or Saturn or some other faraway place, maybe the sun, maybe Venus, whatever. Is that part of your body? All thought is a part of your body. Wherever your thoughts are, that's part of your body. So does your body have a limit? Only the limit that you impose on it. It's like you're inside of an eggshell. How large do you want that eggshell to be? It can be as large as you want it to be. It's like the mosquitoes that were put in a glass jar with a lid on it, and they kept jumping up against the top trying to get away. Finally, they gave up, and they didn't jump anymore. The individual that was doing this experience took the lid off. The mosquitoes never jumped out. Because they were trained that they could only jump that high, and it was futile. Is that the way we want to be in a shell? A small shell, we want that to be our body? People that are really successful say you need to think big if you want to get big results. You can't think small. It's like the professor came to class with a big white sheet with a little black dot in the middle. He hung it up and asked for observations. They couldn't figure out what he wanted them to say. Of course, it's not what he wanted them to say. He wanted them to do some thinking. The most important, the only thing that's important to learn in an education is how to think. Forget the information. You can probably get that out of a cell phone on the internet, let alone a big computer or a quantum computer that computes at the speed of light, therefore overcomes the belief of time. It's not what the professor expects. A good professor would expect someone to do some original thinking. So the class that was looking at the sheet, they said, well, you know, it's a big white sheet there. You know, what do you want us to say? And then somebody noticed there was the little black dot in the middle. Oh, that's what you want us to be focusing on, the black dot. Okay, we see a white sheet, but there's a black dot there. Yeah, that's the important thing, that black dot. And they all agreed, that's it. So the professor said, look, if you've got a problem, are you going to focus on a tiny little problem? Are you going to expand your vision and look at a bigger picture? Einstein stated that you cannot solve a problem if you think about it on the level of where the problem was perceived. You have to expand your thought to a higher, larger picture if you want to solve the problem. Of course, Mary Baker Eddy promotes that we look at the infinite. Can't get any bigger than that, because the infinite continues to reveal a larger and larger perspective without limit. Mary Baker Eddy states that infinite progress is concrete being. Thinking about concrete as being something permanent, it's the only thing that can be reliable. Concrete being, the only thing that can be reliable is to what? Continue to progress. Infinite progression is concrete being. How are we going to look at growth? Are we going to say, well, I only want to grow this much? Mary Baker Eddy refers to age on a material level as being something that should reflect increasing wisdom. We have more and more experience. We should look at growth as being growth of more and more wisdom. If one has a physical appearance of a growth that is abnormal on what is considered a physical body, or even if it's inside the body, whatever, whether it's visible or invisible, suppose someone has gone through some kind of a diagnosis from an MD, and the MD says, well, you've got a growth inside doing something growing. It's causing a problem. It doesn't matter whether it's exterior or interior, whether it's visible or invisible. The point is, the only growth that can be considered real is something that is of the substance, that is the only substance that is real, which is spirit. We don't have to be concerned about getting too much spirit. We don't have to be concerned about growing too much in spirit. What we have to be concerned about is, are we growing in spirit at all? The first thing one needs to think about when they have a problem is to forget the problem. Mr. Rawson, who is obviously one of the greatest practitioners of all time, he's been gone for over 100 years, but he said, make a flat denial of what the problem seems to be. So if you've got an abnormal growth, you make a very flat, fast statement. There is no abnormal growth, period. Don't say on my arm or my finger or inside my head or whatever, it doesn't matter. Just say there is no abnormal growth, period. And then explain the reason why, which is exactly what Mary Baker Eddy instructs us to do. There is no abnormal growth because the only action is God. God is all action. God is mind. And mind represents the office of God that is action. First of all, you have to have some creative activity. And you have to couple that with the other facets of mind from omniscience, which is what? Knowing, intelligence, wisdom. Those are the three that come to thought. So if you utilize intelligence, wisdom, and the knowing faculty of omniscience, couple that with creative creative thought, and then think about the capacities of mind, which is capacity, capability, facility, functionality. These are all parts of mind. Now, they have to be of the substance of spirit. They can't be of matter. Mary Baker Eddy says there is no matter. Einstein didn't figure that out until about 1950. He said, my gosh, Mary Baker Eddy's a genius. She figured that out 80 years ago. He was an avid student of Mary Baker Eddy. Made some very fine statements about her, and they're recorded on our website, or reiterated on our website. He's an author listed under his name. He said, everything that is in this book. In other words, he's saying that all the facts that exist are in Science and Health. And he said, blessed art thou, thou being Mary Baker Eddy. For everything that really is in this book. He said, imagine a woman knew this 80 years ago. And remember, women couldn't vote. This was back in 1866 when she discovered Christian Science, or when she produced the first copy of Science and Health in 1875. But women were considered second class. Like when Jesus was giving those hillside sermons, they didn't count women and children. They would say there were 4,000 plus women and children. They didn't even count the women and children. They just said, well, yeah, there were some women and children there. Wow. Has the world changed? Now women are dominating probably a majority of the major corporations. How they manage that flip-flop is very interesting. Mary Baker Eddy said she hopes that the pendulum doesn't swing too far the other way. I think she would agree that it has swung too far the other way. How about race? The white race is a minority in America. They used to be probably, 90-95%. Now it's the minority. Women are the majority in business management. I think men have lost interest in being successful. But of course, what is success? So what are we going to include in our body? Every relationship, every thought, every action, whatever we spend any time on, that's all part of our body. The body is the container of our experience. And we create our own experience because it all comes from thought. Unless we're passive and we just absorb what anything else, whatever is out there in the atmosphere, because unconsciously we are part of the universal belief of the failure of the human race. We're born with the belief that we are a sinner and we're doomed to die. You know, we'll go through this birth, we'll have some growth, we'll peak out, deteriorate, and then expire. That's what is ingrained in what they call a DNA. The belief, the universal belief. Just like a flower. Starts out as a seed, blooms into this beautiful thing, expires, gone, becomes whatever, fodder for, compost. Mr. Rossin said, we have one goal, and that's to make other people happy. Love is the key. Joy, happiness. Critical, critical qualities. I had a long time, very successful practitioner. And she said, qualities, qualities, all are qualities. I visited her and her husband one day, and the Summer Olympics were on. They were performing gymnastics at the moment. And she doesn't make any comment about anything except qualities. She says, look at the grace, the smoothness, the coordination. And I was just talking about principles. She's talking about soul. She's talking about the plan and design, love, system and structure, which is principle. And she was looking at it from soul, which is spiritual sense, which is seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling based on spirit. Soul are the senses that are spiritual senses because spirit is the only substance. And of course, there had to be the enlightenment, the idea of how this would all fit together for the gymnast to put her act together. And look at these figure skaters. I mean, they overcome any belief of dizziness. I mean, they can make these twirls and they go on and on and on. They stop in such grace. Tesla, one of the greatest geniuses of all time on electromagnetism and electricity, he said that Earth, and he figured this out long before other people had, he said Earth is an electromagnetic field. He said it's not made up of matter. It's not a planet. He said gravity is not what you have to be concerned with. He says the electromagnetic field is what you need to be dealing with. He walked down the street holding a light bulb, and the bulb was lit. The key to healing is to forget about healing. It is to focus on improving one's concept of God and how what we look in the mirror and see, we must realize that that is not a physical thing in reality, but it's our thought is what we see. So what do we want to see? What thought do we want to project? We can smile, and how does that look compared to frowning? It's the difference between daylight and dark. And all we have to do is have a thought that is pleasant, and we smile. Walk down the street on a dreary day and smile and say hello to everyone. You'd be surprised how they respond back. They can't resist it. They have to smile and say hello. You might have a few stick-in-the-muds, but generally speaking, people are very responsive to joy and happiness and harmony. They run away from chaos. That must mean they really want harmony and peace and joy. When we think about growth and body, let's think about growth being an increase in wisdom. And forget that supposed symptom. Typically, when there's a problem, the symptom is not an indication that is related to the problem. Someone might be driving in the car and have a flat tire that delays them getting to a very important meeting. Think about that is a mesmeric suggestion to delay the meeting or prevent you from being there at all. Don't think about the flat tire. The flat tire is just a decoy. Probably most symptoms are decoys to what the real problem is. If it's an abnormal growth, invisible or visible, internal or external, doesn't matter. Are we carrying around things that are bothering us? Mary Baker Eddy says, if we have something bothering us, it will appear on the weakest part of our body. I know someone that was very solid CS student. Studied continuously for years. But he really cared about what his body looked like. He went to the gym constantly. I don't know, once a day, I guess. Yeah, boy, he wanted to look good. And physically, he did. I mean, he looked years younger than what the calendar said that he was. Good-looking man. And guess what problem that he had? I didn't find this out till after he was gone. He was a good friend of mine. We talked frequently. He had skin cancer. He was concerned about the appearance of his body, and what did it do? It attacked the appearance of his body. Mary Baker Eddy said it so vividly. It will attack the weakest part of our body. I didn't even know he was gone until after he was gone. I mean, I didn't even know he was seriously ill. He didn't talk to anybody about anything about it. Well, and I wouldn't expect him to, and I wouldn't myself. If I had a problem, that's the last thing in the world I'd do is discuss it with someone. I've been considered very private in my life for my entire adult life. I grew up in a family that we didn't discuss things like that publicly. My mother probably, my dad was very busy in the business, so my mother probably did 90% of the metaphysical work for the family. We had perfect attendance in 12 years of school. The whole family did, four of us kids. The only family in the world that had 12 years of perfect attendance. I mean, that's what the school said. To have one student that has 12 years is extremely rare, but to have all in the family, four different kids, to have perfect attendance, they'd never heard of such a thing. So what did it get us? Well, it gave us good health all the time. But I mean, you know, they gave us a certificate. You know, you can burn that. I mean, that's not of any value. So think about what the real problem is. Are we carrying around things that we don't need to carry with us? Are we like a small engine, like say, of course, today you don't know what kind of an engine these cars have, and Volkswagens have regular size cars, but they used to be considered the small car with a small engine, wouldn't go very fast. And are we trying to pull a big dump truck or a big load of rocks with it? Are we like a locomotive that is going up a big mountain? Do we need to cut off some of the, do we need to disconnect some of the cars from the train, or stall the train and have the load pull us backwards down the hill? Well, that'd be bad. How much are we carrying with us? Mary Baker Eddy says that we should not go forward with any luggage. She says we should settle our accounts all the time, continuously. Settle our accounts, square our accounts, she says. Do we have a disagreement with someone? We may have a solid disagreement. Maybe both of us are doing logical thinking and we have different viewpoints on it. That's not a problem. But if we both think that we are looking at it correctly and in a balanced way, then just agree to disagree. That settles that account. Don't begrudge the other person because they don't accept your viewpoint any more than you would want them to be angry because, you know, you're not accepting theirs. What other people think is not our business. Mary Baker Eddy says we will be kept plenty busy if we take care of our own business. What is our business? Our business is our consciousness, because everything evolves from our consciousness. That is truth. Consciousness is a quality of truth. Motive is a part of truth. Do we have a disagreement on a payment of a bill? Maybe we think that we got cheated on something. We bought something, took it back, and they wouldn't give us a refund because it was something in their policy that said, well, you don't get a refund on this kind of a merchandise, whatever. Forget it. Forget it. My dad said the smartest advertising, the best advertising you can ever do, and he was in business his whole adult life, is a satisfied customer. Says no money can buy what a satisfied customer buys you. He says, doesn't matter what it takes. Take a loss. Doesn't matter whether you think you were right and the customer was wrong. The customer is never wrong if you want them to be satisfied. Whatever it takes. Sam Walton built the biggest retail company in the world by giving an unequivocal, no questions asked, anytime you want to, refund. Unfortunately, that was adopted by some other stores, and people got greedy and they abused it. Computers came onto the line. You know, he established that back in about 1960, I guess, when he got started, something like that. And so then when computers came out, years later, people would buy a computer and keep it for 3 or 4 years, and then they'd come out with a new model, and they'd take the old computer back for a refund. They accepted that for a while. Another big box store, I think it was Costco, was the first one that got wise to the fact that they were being abused. And then they said, okay, the refund is only for this amount of time. I don't know what it was. But it wasn't any time for any reason, you know, because you want a new model for free. So, customer satisfaction doesn't work if the customer is crooked. Nothing works if one party is crooked. And of course, nothing even begins to work if both parties are crooked. So, are we crooked? Well, we're real crooked if we're going to let an abnormal growth focus our consciousness. Our consciousness needs to be proactive, not passive. We need to be projecting the truth. We need to be inundated with truth. If we focus on a so-called abnormal growth, forget it. Don't look in the mirror at it. Don't feel it with your hand wherever it is. Forget it. Cover it up. Cover it up so you don't see it. If you're taking a shower and you're going to feel it every time, forget it. Don't clean that area. Just let it go dirty. Better than dirtying up your thought about the growth. Never do anything that reminds you of a problem. And if the thought comes to you, you've got to immediately do what Mr. Rawson suggested. And of course, Mary Baker Eddy has stated the same thing. I mean, he learned everything he learned from, first of all, studying thoroughly and understanding in a obviously a very advanced way Mary Baker Eddy's writings and her discovery, and used her shoulders to stand on for him to go up from there. Because she told us that she had to leave open the door for future writers and for future discovery. That's why she never copyrighted her science and health textbook, starting with, I think it was about 3 or 4 years before the end. You know, the last few editions, I don't know how many there were, but from about 1906 to 1910, when she left, she didn't copyright any of them. The church hierarchy has gotten through a fake copyright, but, you know, that's not her problem. You know, she left it the way she wanted it. They took her picture out. They wanted to separate her from her discovery. Well, that didn't hurt her. That only hurt the people that were doing the evil acts. But she left it open. In her book, Christ and Christmas, she has 11 illustrations, and the 11th one is blank. I think it's the 11th. Maybe it's the 12th. Anyway, whatever. It's the last illustration is blank. And that is purposely to let you know the door is open for further inspiration, individual salvation. We almost work out our own salvation. One can give another one some ideas, but they have to be internalized. I remember I was studying a topic at an advanced level, and I was very enthusiastic. And I mentioned it to my longtime friend, who was the very successful practitioner I mentioned. And boy, that was a mistake. She says, don't be overwhelmed with personality. Maybe this guy is really great at what he does. Maybe he has a very clear understanding of it, and people recognize him as in the industry as a leader, which they did. And now they have software that he developed, and he gets a royalty on every time it's used from many companies, many different software packages. But anyway, the point is that she says you have to make your own what you're going to use in your development and your practice of this particular topic. And boy, she was right. Absolutely right. So I've been trying to follow that thought in anything new that I am involved in research and development. And we all have to do the same thing. Mary Baker Eddy said that she moved from Boston to Concord, New Hampshire, because everyone was depending on her to do their work for them. I mean, she'd have all these huge audiences that would come and attend her talks. And so she knew that she shouldn't even go to the church to give talks. And so she didn't. Once that mother church was built, the one on the corner, the small one, and then, of course, the extension was built a few years later, she never went there to give any talks, period. She didn't even go there to see it. And when she saw it, when she saw the extension, she says, wow. She says, I'm glad I never showed up here. They would be deitizing me something fierce. So what she did is she wrote these messages to the Mother Church. I think they started in 1899, maybe. I know it was before the first one that's in the books. The first one in the books is 1900. I think it's 1900, 01, and 02. But I know that I think it's Miscellaneous Writings, she has one for 1899, and I think maybe even 1896. I don't know. But anyway, the point is that she knew that she couldn't be there. And she says, if you want to find her in her books. Because that's where her inspiration is. That's why she did the genius thing of creating the 26 Bible lesson topics. And of course, that was, again, as is all of her inspiration from, you know, from inspiration. All of her great things are from spiritual inspiration. She says, I was a scribe under orders. It wasn't her. She was a scribe under orders. Nothing great is from a person. Individuals can be reflecting the principles that govern the universe, whether they're thinking of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, or love. And they have to use the operators, which are the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. The Word being the facts, the Christ being the translation, the Christianity being the demonstration, and the science being living the demonstration automatically, being it. It's like Jesus when he ascended. He was at the science. He was at the science. He'd given up all belief of life, truth, and intelligence in matter. He knew the facts of God. And obviously, his title was Christ, so that's the translation. He saw a man that was blind. He didn't see him blind. He saw him as God's idea. Therefore, he was able to heal him. He saw the lepers as God's ideas, able to heal him. Tabitha, Lazarus, no matter what the problem was, he saw him as God's idea. He translated it automatically. That's what we need to do. Mary Baker Eddy says we should pray ceaselessly. Pray without ceasing. Or maybe that's from the Bible. I don't know. But anyway, the thought is that we need to be watching our thought continuously, no matter what activity we're involved in. No matter what activity, we have to be thinking about the qualities and the operators, the four operators, the functions. The functionality. Oh, one more thing that came to me to mention, and that is that power, if you go to buy a car, well, maybe not so much now, but it used to be that they advertised them by horsepower. I don't know why they still talk about horses for power when we have rockets. But what is power? It is a measurement. It's nothing by itself. It's just a number. Power is a number. It's a measurement of performance. Performance is what really counts, not power. Power is only a measurement of what the performance is. And what is performance? Performance is a result of the things I mentioned before, and that is the creative activity that is combined with intelligence, wisdom, and knowing, with capability, facility, functionality, and it all goes together to come up with performance. And of course, it has to be based on the real substance, which is spirit. It has to have life. It has to be truth. There can't be mistakes. There has to be love. Love is required for everything to work, because that's the system and that's the plan and design. Love is the plan and design of everything. Principle is the system and structure. And we have to be having a spiritual sense about it on how we're viewing it, so we're looking at it with spiritual perspective of seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. So we have to have all those things together to come up with real performance, which gives us real power. So all of these different synonymous terms work together. You cannot think about power without thinking about these other ones. You can't think about love without thinking of these other ones. You can't be thinking about any of them without thinking about the other six. So, very, very interesting to take a broader look. If we think we've got an abnormal growth, and we think it's on a body, what body are we thinking about? We better be expanding our thought of what body is, and we better be minimizing what we think the growth is if we're thinking of it as a physical thing. We need to just get our thought off of it altogether. Mary Baker Eddy has an article on vision that's on our homepage right now. And of course, it's listed under treatments for Mary Baker Eddy in her index. But she says, can you focus no matter what comes your way? That's what a genius is. That's the only difference between somebody that is considered a genius and someone that is not considered a genius. The genius can focus no matter what comes their way. One of the guys with the greatest number of patents is a Japanese fellow, and he slept 2 hours and worked 2 hours. That was his schedule. I think his wife would have, he'd probably not married. If he was married, his wife would have a little bit of difficult time not knowing whether she had a husband or didn't have a husband. I think he probably would be living by himself with that schedule. But anyway, he had to focus. And he came to the conclusion he could focus very intently for 2 hours. So he worked for 2 hours. Then he went to bed for 2 hours. Worked for 2 hours, went to bed for 2 hours. He had something like over 2,000 patents when I did research on this. He could focus. He could focus. As long as it's a wholesome thing that you're doing. That's the main thing. Is it something that's going to help mankind? Because that's what our focus should be. How are we helping mankind with what we're doing? Are we? If we're not, we better change what we're doing. Sooner or later, we will figure out that it's futile. Mary Baker Eddy states about how when someone is 30, or I don't know, maybe 20, they know everything. 30, they don't know quite as much as they did when they were 20, and 40, and 50, and 60. She says, finally, by the time they get to be around 60, they realize that their whole life has been a waste, and they better regroup and refocus. That's wisdom. That's wisdom. That's when we're finally waking up a little bit and realizing we better reorient. The whole key is to realize that there is nothing but God. God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing. Do we have a problem seeing? Know that God is all-seeing. Do we have a problem moving? God is all-action, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise. Do we have a problem making a decision? All-loving. Do we have a problem with hate? And eternal. Do we think we're going to die? Eternal. All-seeing, all-knowing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, spirit, soul, life, truth, and love. Each one of these have specific, unique qualities, and yet they all go together. It's like the roots of the redwood sequoias up in northwest corner of California and probably touches southern Oregon. Anyway, supposedly the oldest and the largest trees. And their roots bond together underneath a shallow surface. They're not deep rooted. You would think they would be hundreds of feet deep, like these big skyscrapers they build. They go down into the earth a long way. Many stories are the foundation, the structure of the foundation. Nope, not these trees. Very, very shallow surface roots, but they bond together. They bond together, and that's what gives them their tenacity to continue to live in spite of fire and flood and wind and whatever. Okay? Unity. That's the key, unity. Are we unified with God? Are we unified with the one universal cause and creator? When we think in a bigger perspective, we'll forget all about some kind of an abnormal growth. We don't even want to think about it. If the thought ever comes, we just say, there is no abnormal growth. The only growth I have is wisdom that comes from God. My reflection, my manifestation of God's wisdom, which has no limit. That's the only kind of growth that's important to think about. When we do that, we'll forget all about this other. And like she said in that article on vision, she says, don't worry about your glasses. She says, you got rid of your glasses. And she said, forget that, wear your glasses, and forget about the problem. I don't know, that's not a very good paraphrase of it, but anyway. it's a short article, and I highly recommend that everyone read it, because it applies not just if you have an eye vision problem, but everything is a focus on vision. Everything in our whole life is vision. How do we see anything? And everything. It could be a friend, it could be a marriage, it could be children, family, it could be a business, it could be a relationship of any kind, any kind of a problem. How do we see it? Everything is dependent upon how we see it. Vision. Probably if there's only one word in the whole vocabulary that would be worth focusing on. If somebody had to say, what is the If you had only one word to focus on, what would it be? To me, it would be vision. That's it, period. Vision. It's not eyes. It's not looking. It's vision. Vision. That's the key. There's nothing but God. Amen.